You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Phillies Backstage. I'm Tom Burgoyne, joined by John Brazier, and we have an exciting guest in our studio. John, how about this?
It's somebody, what I love about baseball, there's always somebody that will do something that nobody will ever do. Mm. And this guy that we're about to interview, former Philly, did something that will probably in eternity never be broken. No hitter. Two home runs in the same game. Rick Wise. Rick, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, thanks. Nice to be here.
Yeah, and so it was 50 years ago, Rick, and we're celebrating it today, which is pretty cool. I mean, how's it make you feel to come back to Philadelphia and relive basically 50 years ago?
Only 50 years
only
ago?
50 years.
Oh, my. Time flies. It's wonderful to be back, and I brought my family back, and it's hard to believe that much time has passed, but it's clear in my mind still. Most of the things that happened that day, I remember like it was 2 weeks ago.
There's a well-hit ball deep left field. That might go. It is a home run for Rick Wise, his second of the game. His fourth home run of the year. His ninth career home run. And what a story. George Foster due to hit next. Here's the 3-2 pitch. Swing, a line drive, he did it! Vukovich made the grab, Wise has done it! A no-hit, no-run game! Throws with a line drive to Vukovich, it's all over! Rick Wise has just pitched a no-hitter, and look at his Philly teammates mob him. Wise has done it!
Remember it, yeah, and I know John and I grew up Phillies fans, and that clip really is part of Phillies lore, you know, and in the highlights we see it all the time when Rose is up. I didn't realize it was a 3-2 count, yeah. Pete Rose, and when he hit that ball down the third base side to John Vukovich, as soon as he hit it, were you confident Vuk was in the right position to make the play?
Yeah, it wasn't. I threw him a low away fastball, and he just put the bat on it.
Yeah.
He didn't. It wasn't a scorcher.
Right.
But it was right at John. I knew it was going right at him. It wasn't any doubt. I turned and saw it right immediately.
Yeah.
But let's go back to earlier that day because, you know, here is, you know, again, something that no one's ever going to do this again. Maybe Otani, because they're going probably DH next year, right? Yeah. So Otani would be the only shot, right? Because he's a guy that can throw a no-hitter.
And will probably bat for himself.
He'll probably bat for himself. Yeah. But that's the only shot. So you got one guy that has a chance. But let's go back to that day, because if I remember correctly, you were sick, right? You had the flu or you had a bad cold going into that game. You didn't even know if you were going to pitch.
That's correct. I was coming off the effects of the flu. I think I only threw the last start, I think, against the Mets, I believe. I got knocked out in like four innings or something like that. I didn't feel well, and it lingered. It was lingering still 5 days later. So, I knew I was going to start, but it was a matter of how long I was going to last, and you know how much I had in me to pitch deep into the game as a starter should.
And did you feel okay in warmups? Like, how did you feel that day?
Well, let me tell you, I thought the ball was warming up. I thought the ball was stopping halfway to the catcher. I had no fun at all.
How about that? Can you explain then, you know, the day that you had?
Yeah, because, I mean, it was hot in June there in AstroTurf and a cookie-cutter stadium, you know, where the field level is 25 feet below, you know, street level. And right. It just the heat just stays down there, and it sweated out the remnants of that flu through after three innings, and the Reds, they helped me because they were offering at all my early pitches. They were putting the ball in play for whatever reason. I mean, they were no hit 2 weeks before my no-hitter by Kenny Holtzman. So I don't know if a lot of people realize that. But anyway, back to my game. I mean, they were offering, and I was throwing strikes, and they were hitting the ball. And because I wasn't striking anyone out. I only had three during the entire game.
But were you feeling good, though, like during?
And then after the third, I mean, I was spotting the ball.
Right.
I think early they thought I was throwing harder than I was because they hit against me before, and they knew that I, you know, was a hard thrower, but I wasn't throwing quite that hard in the early innings, and I think they're out in front of a lot of the pitches, and just their timing was off just enough.
Well, and we're talking about the Reds, all right? We're talking Tony Perez, Johnny Bench, Pete Rose, right? Cesar Geronimo, right?
Yeah. Were all those guys on that 71 team at that point?
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm equating the mid-70s. But
George,
a lot of
this. Yeah, George Foster,
right?
McRae.
Yep.
Al McRae. Concepcion.
Your last three hitters were, I think, Stewart, Klein, and then Rose. I didn't know too much about Stewart and Klein, but were they?
One was a pinch hitter.
Okay.
I struck him out.
Yeah.
Oh, he saw me later
that was
on.
Stewart.
He said the ball was inside. He said, I said, you can't take a 3-2 pitch on a possible no-hitter and have the umpire give you the call.
And then with Klein, on the second out, you had to cover first base.
Yes.
And I guess it's just automatic, right, Rick? But no butterflies like, oh, my gosh, I got to get over to first base on that play?
That's just ingrained in
pitches.
Any ball hit to the right side,
yep.
You're breaking for the bag.
Yep.
And beat him by a step. So something like that.
So I'm always curious too. Like when we've asked Tommy Green this many times.
Yeah.
But when you're in the midst of a no hitter, when do you, as a pitcher, in your head realize you have a no hitter? I mean, is it apparent throughout the game, or does it hit you in the seventh inning that wow, I haven't given up a hit?
Well, to answer the last part of your question first, I always feel that a pitcher has to go through seven innings before he thinks he has a shot at a no-hitter. The last six outs at a no-hitter are the toughest for the nine innings. I mean, they've gone through the lineup three times. You know, you 21 batters, or maybe in my case it was 22 because I walked Concepcion, but I ended up with only 27, facing 27 outs, 27 batters. But the pitcher knows at four or five innings. I mean, you're sitting in the dugout and the scoreboard's right there.
Right.
I mean, you know.
Right.
No one's been on base. You haven't been working out of the stretch.
Yeah.
You're aware of what's going on. And as the game progresses, that old, you know, voodoo type thing, you know, around the team.
They're avoiding you at this point?
They're just not mentioning anything.
Right.
I mean, the game is still in progress. You still, guys are getting up and guys are coming in and getting ready for their at-bats, but everyone knows.
Well, we can't ignore the fact that you hit two home runs. Do you think did that help you think maybe take your mind off the fact that, hey, I've got a no-no going here? Or, I mean, the two home runs, you know, really kind of made that day extra special, I guess.
Well, considering the way I felt all day leading up to the game, but that was actually the second time that year I hit two home runs in a game.
Yeah.
I think it tied a National League record for a pitcher.
Yeah.
But, no, I was just trying to help the offense out. I mean, I was just, when I get up there, I'm trying to put the ball in play and get on base.
Yeah. And did you pride yourself as a hitter?
I did.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so.
Absolutely, I did. I didn't want to be an automatic. And, first of all, pitchers back then, they had to be able to bunt. That's the least they should be able to do. You work on it. And with our skipper, Gene Mock, if you couldn't bunt as a pitcher, he'd take you out. He'd put in a pinch bunter, so to speak, to move a runner over and get in a scoring position. If it was a close game, if you're down by one run or game tied, seventh inning, bunting the runner over, getting a tight game like that, it was important. You don't see it too much anymore.
Yeah.
But you guys also worked on your hitting as a pitcher, right? Didn't you have, like, competitions with the relievers versus starters?
We did, at home.
Right.
At home. We got some time in spring training to go down in the cages, you know, and do a little swinging down there, but not a lot. Pitchers were getting their arms and bodies in shape in spring training. We didn't work year around like they do now,
right, with
million-dollar gymnasiums or, you know, weight rooms and stuff, right, like they have now. But we got ourselves in really top-notch shape during spring training.
And your second home run, I think it was like a 3-1 count.
2-0.
Oh, 2-0 count, right. 2-0 count. You looked at
George Mind.
Right, who gave it, he turned his back, and that was his signal you got the green light.
That's right. And it was Clay Carroll. He was a fine reliever, one of the top relievers in the game at that time. What's he going to do, throw me a breaking ball or try to trick me?
Yeah, you're waiting for it.
I mean, I could just as well popped it up or ground it. I mean, how many pitches are you going to hit 2-0?
Yeah. But well,
I did. So
John, Rick had 15 career home runs, and you're on the list of, somewhere on the list. Wes Ferrell, back in for the Indians and the Red Sox, had 38 home runs. He's the pitcher who has the most.
By the way,
go ahead.
He probably doesn't even have to take the quiz because we've already answered three of these questions.
But listen, some of these players, Rick, like on the list, so 38 home runs, Wes Ferrell, but then Bob Lemon had 37, Warren Spahn had 35, Drysdale sixth on the list with 29, Gibson had 24 home runs. Mm-hmm. Walter Johnson, 24 home runs. More modern as Baumgartner, 19 home runs. Cy Young had 18 home runs. Jim Kitty-Cott at 16 home runs. And you're right there with 15. As you mentioned, you had a two home run game, I think, against San Francisco that year. You had 6 in 71. But, it's awesome.
Well, and the 15 home runs all came in my first 9 years.
Mm.
In the
National League. Yeah,
right.
Then I went 6 years in the American League. I didn't pick up a bat for 6 years, except 75 we got a little, because we were playing Cincinnati in the World Series. So we got a little.
You got some hacks in.
I got the swing at the Green Monster, which I really miss playing in Boston.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, all my homers came the first 9 years, and then I didn't get another one the rest of my career.
You know what's interesting too, Tom, is that at that – when does somebody get a standing ovation at a visiting park, right? At Riverfront Stadium, Rick got a standing ovation. Was that, I guess, after your second home run, correct?
Yeah, as I came out. Well, I got some ovation there, I believe. I didn't really hear it because it's
right.
I'm in a visiting stadium. Right. But, baseball people, no matter what, if a pitcher coming out the ninth inning either home team or visiting team, the fans are going to – they appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure. And as DH, I mean, are you for it or against it? I would think that you're probably against it. You'd rather see the National League keep the rule the way it is and not go DH?
From my perspective, I mean, I always felt I had an advantage over my opponent because I only faced 8 hitters. Well, he had to face 9. I was better hitter than – most of my opponents, pitchers, being pitchers, hitting. But I'm not better than the DHs that are going to hit for me. I mean, they're position players and they're batters. They're going to be better than me. But I also have to face another hitter, too.
Yeah, sure.
But also, I can stay in the game longer if I'm behind because I'm not going to be taken out for a – pinch hitter or a bunter.
Yeah.
So if I'm down a run or two in the American League, I'm still in the game. I can pitch ninth inning and hope the team comes up with a couple runs and I can win and the team wins.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's go back early part of your career because your career started. You went to the Little League World Series. Did you guys win the Little League World Series? You grew up in Portland, Oregon,
right?
And you guys went to the Little League World Series, which is there's not a lot of Major League players that have that have went to the Little League World Series and also played in the Major League obviously World Series.
One more thing, though, I pitched the second no hitter in the history of the Babe Ruth World Series.
Oh wow, man, he's got it all covered.
So I don't think there's anyone that's been Little League World Series, Babe Ruth World Series, Major League World Series.
That's nice. Rick, I think your career is absolutely fascinating because, you know, just you make your debut for the Phillies in 1964.
What a year to start.
So you got, and then your first major league win was in the second game of a doubleheader, right, on June 21st. And what happened on that first game?
Well, what do I do for an encore? Follow a perfect game.
Right, Jim Bunning's perfect game. James. His first win was second game, the doubleheader, so he had front row seats for the Jim Bunning perfect game.
James Paul Bunning. And matter of fact, Johnny Klipstein and I combined for a three-hitter in the second game, and I believe it's still a National League record for fewest hits in a
doubleheader.
Three. I think the American League is lower. I think there was no hitter involved in a one hitter or something like that in the American League. But for National League, I think the record still stands for a doubleheader, three hits.
So were you, this is going to be a silly question, but were you more nervous watching Jim Bunning's perfect game than in your own no hitter?
Well, I really didn't get, I was still in the clubhouse.
Right.
Okay. I wasn't on the bench.
Oh, right, there. Right.
Yeah, getting ready for the game.
Watching on TV in the clubhouse.
And I remember when the game ended and they came pouring into the clubhouse and everything, it was pandemonium. And I remember, I need a ball. I got to warm up. Where's my coach? I need a ball. Right. We'll go warm up. Yeah, I didn't have a ball. You know, I got to get ready for I'm starting a game. That was as important to me as Bunning's perfect game was to him. I'm gonna start the second game.
Yeah. Right.
And I remember one funny thing. About the fourth inning, I believe I walked a guy. And there were 55,000 people in the stadium. It's Father's Day. Mm-hmm. And the stadium, they all rose up. And we're cheering and yelling. And I said, what is going on here? I know Mets had some zany fans back then. I said, what's going on? And I've realized that it was a first base runner.
Exactly, all day.
Like 13 innings. And that was a derisive, like a Bronx cheer.
Yeah, Bronx cheer.
So they finally got a runner. Oh, yeah, well, yeah, yeah, yeah. Nevertheless, we won both games, and it was important. It was important, and we were playing good ball. Mm. And early June, and they had to consider themselves, you know, the Phillies. We got an extra win there from an 18-year-old. They didn't really expect. They got a spot start there.
Yeah.
And got a win.
Isn't that something, John? Only 18 years old, right, Rick, when you made your debut in 1964. Wow.
It's another trick. He's 4-for-4 in the quiz that he's about to get at some point.
And so when things went south in that last those last 12 days, you know, I guess, can you recall what you were feeling? I mean, being so young, you probably – could you even comprehend what was going on?
Well, I knew we were losing, but, I didn't say anything. I didn't say much. Yeah. I kept my eyes and ears open and my mouth shut as an 18-year-old. I saw things that just didn't happen. Mm. The other 152 games, I mean, there were bad hops. There was multiple home runs hit against us, multiple home runs hit for us, and we still couldn't win games against the Braves. Cincinnati, we won the last two there, and in Cincinnati, and the Cardinals had to bring in Gibson the last game of the year in relief to beat the Mets. The Mets had beat the Cardinals the first two games, but I didn't start any games during then. I relieved, but I was capable of starting to give Bunning and Short at least an extra day's rest.
Yep.
I mean, I didn't feel like it was being thrown to the wolves. Nevertheless, I mean, I felt every time I went out there I was going to win. But more importantly, even if I didn't, I gave the two aces another day's rest, valuable time to and some other starters too. I don't know if Mahaffey was the same way, or if, I don't know if he was injured or didn't feel or whatever. Yeah. It just didn't, I just saw sliding and couldn't stop.
Yeah.
So 1971, you have a great year. You won 17 games, 2.88 ERA. Phillies were in last place. You went to your first All-Star game that year.
But, John, it was also the moving into the Vet. What
moving
did you think
vet,
of the Vet
right?
when you first saw that stadium for the first time?
Well, it was different than Connie Mack, I'll say that. But Connie Mack was beautiful in its own way. It was a beautiful field. And I loved it being 440 feet in center field.
Yeah. Pitcher-friendly, right?
Oh, I mean, that was way out there.
But the AstroTurf, I mean, what'd you think?
Said, jeepers. You know, and then when Dick or Richie Allen said, if a horse can't eat it, I don't like it. You know,
right.
Speaking of AstroTurf, I mean, it got cooking down there, man.
Yeah.
And a different game, I mean, the speed came into play. It was really prevalent and, you know, was played deep and cut across because every ball was going to the wall. I saw shortstops jump up and just miss a ball, and it ends up, you know, up against the wall, you know, kicked around out there or whatever.
Yeah.
So it was a fast game, and it was a lot different. It was just a new game.
Right.
Different
game. A lot of those stadiums, you have obviously St. Louis and Cincinnati
Pittsburgh.
And Houston. I mean, you really – that was the new modern ballpark.
Yeah, multi-purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah, Seattle was out too in the Kingdome out there before they imploded that concrete mausoleum. But
I think Tug also had something funny. He said his line was someone asked him whether he likes what do you like better, turf or grass. He said, "I don't know. I've never smoked turf." I think he and Richie Allen had the great lines.
What were you surprised then in when you were traded in 72? Were you surprised that the Phillies traded you?
I was.
Yeah.
I mean,
pitching well, like John said, the All-Star game in 71.
But mistake. I bought a home and made the All-Star team.
Ah, is
that
right?
That was my reward. I got traded. You know, and that was a monster year for me. Breakout. I think I became the ace of the staff then, and you felt that at least you're going to be around a little bit longer.
Yeah.
But there wasn't any real. I mean, I got released. I got traded. That was in spring training. I went to spring training when this happened, and commuted from my rental home in Clearwater Beach over to St. Pete because I got traded to the to the Cardinals.
That's where they were.
So I was driving back and forth 20-some miles. I mean, so I just drove, but I kept the same apartment. But the front office didn't contact me, and that's what hurt. Traveling secretary showed up at the door, knocked on the door, and here's your fan mail. You've been traded. That didn't go over well with me.
Right.
Yeah.
And it was really unique situation because, you know, here you've all-star, young all-star that made his first all-star, won 17 games, ERA under 3. And it was over in St. Louis that I guess Steve Carlton had contract demands.
Yes.
And the owner was not happy with Steve. And they knew they had to move him. So then when would you have two superstars traded for each other? You know, back then it was very rare. It took a really extreme case, right? I mean, a very unique
case.
That's
exactly what it was. Salary disputes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Steve, Augie Bush said, "I'm not giving you one red cent more." And John Quinn and I were at loggerheads, and I felt that, you know, I was making $25,000 after 7 years in the big leagues, and I felt it was time to make a move.
Yeah.
And I deserved it.
Yeah.
We had record attendance that year, and that's that's what we based our salaries on back then, more than television radio contracts, which they do now. Attendance. We had a record attendance that year, I believe, with 1.45 million, something like that. So anyway, that's what it came down to. It wasn't because that we both had bad records or whatever. We couldn't agree on our contracts. So, and as it turned out, we both got near or what we wanted with our new clubs.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We'll figure.
Yeah, and it was one of those trades that really worked out for everybody. Yeah, yeah. I mean, certainly Carlton came here and had the career he did. You won 32 games in two seasons with St. Louis. And then when you went on to Boston, you had a great season, that 1975 season, the team that went to the World Series.
Well, yeah, another thing about here going back to St. Louis, I was a starting and winning pitcher in the All-Star game.
Yeah.
But there was, that was a mistake, being in the All-Star and buying a home. He got me traded.
I know.
So, I mean, yeah, and the thing about 75 is that I was coming back from a from an injury. Mm. They Boston, they're tough up there, the crowd and the writers. They thought Boston dealt for damaged goods because I injured my arm because I didn't pitch 12 days out of spring training. Darryl Johnson bypassed me the third game of the year and came back with Lee and Teon. They traded for an all-star pitcher. They needed pitching. I traded for Reggie Smith, fine ball player. And so Darryl Johnson bypassed me the third game of the year because what happened – we opened up in Milwaukee, and I had the third game behind the incumbents. And raised the blind Sunday morning, and there was 6 inches of snow out there in Milwaukee. So there goes my start.
Yeah, yeah.
So we go to Boston, and the storm followed us. And we waited and waited. And when it got nice, like 10 days, they started Lee and Teon again on my start. And I went in and had a conversation with him, and so finally I got my start. About a 37-38 degree day, drizzling rain, cold. It was a backup game of the week, and so they had to play it. They wanted to get it in.
Right.
Sure enough, I mean, I pitched a complete game in this weather, but I paid the price.
Mm. But you also get the your shoulder.
Well, yeah, right. I tore the triceps, and I didn't realize until I faced the Yankees my next start. Through five innings, I shut them out, and the sixth, something was wrong here. I couldn't. I took myself out. I couldn't throw. Something was wrong on my arm, and it was a result of not 12 days leaving spring training and then pitching in 37-38-degree weather. Complete game. And like I said, I paid the price.
How many starts did you miss, though? Because you must have recovered, and then, you know, like I said, you won.
I tried again. And unfortunately, too, during this time I was on the DL, my wife crushed my finger in the door when I was letting the dog out. And so she crushed my little finger in the door. It didn't have any effect because my arm was in bad shape. Anyway, so that just added a little bit more pain to the.
But you were the winning pitcher for the World Series game, of which everyone remembers.
Well, the NLCS or ALCS.
ALCS.
Game.
Sorry, you're right. ALCS.
The Carlton Fisk game.
Carlton Fisk was basically doing.
It was the Rick Wise game.
Come on, Rick Wise game.
It wasn't the Carlton Fisk game.
No, I'm a footnote in that game. But here again, I came in relief.
Yeah.
All the relievers out there.
Right. Yeah.
But the thing of it is, I don't know if Darryl thought of this or not, but no matter how long, I was ready to pitch a complete game in relief. If the game went 18 innings or whatever,
you're ready to go.
If I was throwing good, I could have kept going and going.
Yeah.
And so they wouldn't have to use anymore.
That's the one DH, you know, when you have a DH, John, I mean, you can do that. Yeah, you put a reliever in the ninth inning. If it goes 15, 20 innings, you know, if he's a long guy like Rick, you know.
I really find your career just fascinating because there's so many just missed. I mean, just missed perfect game, just missed no hitters, right, along with the ones he already had.
Yeah, 30 shutouts, John. That's,
I'm saying. So the one I was saying to you, I guess it was George Scott, right? Hit with two outs in the ninth, broke up a no-hitter, and there was the first game of a doubleheader. But there's just a lot of those in your career, which is just it's an amazing career.
Well,
really
let me let let you in on something about Boomer. Boomer should have never come to the plate. I had struck out the hitter before, catcher, Sharp, I think his name is, and he did not offer at any pitch at the at-bat. I threw six strikes, but the umpire, I kept hitting strikes, low strikes, good strikes. He didn't, an umpire, ball one, ball two, ball three. I mean, they were strikes. And this is a no-hitter on the line. And then to give Boomer another shot, don't give that. He
right.
George is a dangerous hitter, man. He was a dangerous hitter. And sure enough, he touched one off to center field. So I lost that one. I lost another one in St. Louis when Joe Morgan hit. I had one out in the ninth or two outs in the – one out in the ninth, I believe. Morgan punched one up the middle, and I lost that no-hitter there. So, I came close two or three times, matter of fact.
Awesome.
You know, if gambling was legal back then, I think every time he went to pitch, I'd probably put the odds on it, you know, no-hitter, right?
And the prop bet, is it going to be a no-hitter or not?
Yeah, right. How many home runs are you going to have?
I have to ask you, too, Rick. You wore glasses, kind of were your trademark early on in the career. At some point, did you get contact lenses?
I did.
Okay, yeah.
I did, and this was early in contact's development, so to speak.
Yeah.
And I tried them, and I tried them out in San Francisco, a Candlestick. Bad place to try contacts.
The wind.
The dust
getting in.
And everything. Sure. And they fell out.
Is that right?
One time when we were all looking on the mound looking for my contact. And then another time I fell asleep on one of the flights, on a charter flight with the contacts in.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I could hardly get open my eyes at the end of the flight, wake up and get them out and they dried out. They're not like today's contacts. Throw them away after a month or whatever they do now. I just said, I'm back to my glasses. I've been wearing them since I was 17.
Right.
So.
Yeah. That was kind of a trademark. Yeah, as kids, you know, Rick Wise would be pitching. It's like, Rick, you know, when you're.
I remember DeColvy, you know, with the glasses.
Yeah, for sure.
Ryan Duren. Ooh, Ryan Duren had some glasses on. The guy said they looked like bottoms of Coke bottles, and he threw them close to 100 miles an hour, and every time he came in, his trademark was the first pitch he came in was up on the screen.
Okay.
So the hitters are the visiting hitters are going, they're back off the plate as far as they could get, you know.
Yeah, sure.
And this guy's not going to, looking in there and stuff, and is this guy going to drill me or what? Not intentionally, but can't see, crying out loud.
Right.
So anyway, and Bob Veal used to go like this to take the fog off his glasses. He was a specimen, I mean, huge man, 6'9" or 10" or whatever, and he could bring some heat. And he's out there with those glasses, with his glove, trying to get the fog off. And the guys are going, can he see? Can he actually see? And so there was a few of us that wore glasses.
Did you have any of those issues, and that's why you switched to the contacts? That's why you tried out the contacts?
I just tried them.
Yeah.
I wanted to see how they were.
Yeah.
And didn't work at that time. I never tried again.
Yeah.
Now, we found out before we started recording that you are a big music fan, and you mentioned George Thorogood came down to visit you guys one time, came in your clubhouse.
That's right.
Right?
During the senior league, yeah. He was going to do a gig after our game with the – I was with the Super Sox, which was the Red Sox former players. And we were in Winter Haven, Florida, which was our spring training place for the Red Sox. So he was going to do a gig after the game. But he came into the clubhouse, his band, and was chatting. He loves baseball.
Yep.
He loves baseball, and we all love music. We wanted to talk music. He wanted to talk baseball. So we did. We just whatever came out of our mouths. We were, you know, how'd you start? How'd you play? And where are you going next? And he was asking, you know, geez, you threw a no-hitter. I know you did, and all this sort of stuff. And he's talking to my wife, and I mean, it was a good time.
Did you get a lot of that? Like, you know, in this day and age, you have Eddie Vedder, who's a big baseball fan. He'll come down and hang out, you know, pregame during batting practice. And you get a lot of cross between those musicians and athletes. So did you, when you were in your playing days for whatever team you were playing, did you guys have that? Did you have guys come to, you know, notable, you know, rock and roll singers or
oh, other celebrities? Oh, yeah. In Boston, I was good, very good friends with the Jay Giles band.
Oh, I love those guys. Yeah.
They gave me, I was 7-8 feet from them in their
those
concert.
Those guys are great.
In their concerts.
Oh, yeah, my God. He's got a good solo career, too.
Yeah, man. Peter Wolf.
Peter Wolf was fabulous. Seth Justman, I remember those guys. And I gave them tickets to the Red Sox game, and they gave me tickets
That's
to
great.
Their concerts.
Yeah.
We went to them, and I took Carlton Fisk and a bunch of the players, two or three, four of them, and we've had pictures of Jay Giles' band and the Red Sox
nice.
Teammates. It
Gotta
was
love
cool.
That. Peter Wolf just played here, Rick, 2 years ago. They opened for he opened for The Who
okay.
in 2019. So he's still going strong. He's not with the whole band. I think he's you know, it's not the Jay Giles band anymore. But
no.
He's still jumping around on stage. Had so much energy, that guy.
Yeah, he was. Oh, the whole band was. They
yeah.
were great. Jay Giles was a great guy.
Nice.
Great guy. They were all, you know, Peter Wolf, they were from Boston. They were
yeah.
Boston.
Yep. Yeah. The Cars are from Boston.
A lot of Cars.
Aerosmith.
Aerosmith.
That's right.
Right.
The Cars.
Yeah.
Good stuff, John. You ready to?
Well, I think so Rick is going
to. Rick's already answered all.
Rick is going to do really well because I think we can all probably answer. I mean, you literally touch on almost everyone. Now, the first couple, we'll see who he does in the first couple because then on he's going to be fine. All right, Rick, we have 8 questions. We do a silly quiz, and I usually mess it up somehow. So the bar that we usually say is, what, 6 out of 8, Tom?
Yeah.
And since
he's already answered 5 of them.
Yes, he's doing pretty well. But I think, Tom, you have to give Rick something Fnatic-related if he gets at least 6, right?
So maybe Fnatic.
Maybe some books for his – do you have grandkids, Rick?
I do.
Yes.
And great grandkids.
Oh, well, there you go.
We'll have to get you some Philly Fnatic
some
books for the grandkids.
Autographed Philly Fnatic books
Absolutely.
For your grandkids.
That's Wonderful. A good call, John.
Wonderful.
All right. Your first question is, it's multiple choice. You went to Madison High School in Portland, Oregon. Now it's, I think it's Leotis V. McDaniel High School. Which of these celebrities did not go to that high school? So there's going to be 3 of these celebrities went to your high school, Madison High School. 1 did not. Okay, so you got to tell me which one did not.
Okay.
So A is Brian Cole, bass player and founding member of the 60s folk rock band The Association. They played that song Cherish,
yeah,
Cherish.
Love Association.
Love, right? And Never My Love, all that, whatever. Or I think I just combined the two songs.
Yeah.
So
Don't
Brian,
sing.
Brian Cole. B is Match Game 76. Remember that game? Match Game 76 celebrity Soupy Sales. C is Kent Bottenfield, who's a former Major League Baseball pitcher, played for the Phillies in 2000. And D is Rob Dressler, another former Major League Baseball player, played for the Giants, Cards, and Mariners. So is it Brian Cole, Soupy Sales, Kent Bottenfield, or Rob Dressler?
Who did not go there?
Who did not go?
I say Soupy Sales.
Soupy Sales is correct. And you know what, Rick? I always put somebody from Match Game 76. I'm showing my age in every one of these quizzes. So you passed that
I'm
one,
I'm not
right.
even sure Soupy Sales was on Match Game, John. I think
it?
You're – yeah, I don't
really?
Think he was.
Yes, he had to have been on Match Game.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. What was he on, Password
he
or something?
He is now.
yeah, exactly, Rick. All right. Question number 2. Your first minor league season was with the 1963 Bakersfield Bears. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so I'm going to give you 4 players. 3 of them were your teammates, and 1 was not a teammate.
Okay.
Which one was not the teammate? Say A, John Briggs, B, Grant Jackson, C, Mike DiMuzio, D, Fred Walters.
C
is correct. Mike DiMuzio, who's our longtime, what is Mike's
Mike
operations?
Was on the ground crew when you were pitching here.
Yes, he was probably on the ground crew when you were pitching, yeah. Way back when.
And now he runs.
He would have been a young ground crew member.
Connie
no,
Matt?
He was very young.
Connie
no,
Matt?
No, I'm sorry. When he came to the vet. Yeah, when he came to the vet.
He's still here. As
All he had to do is the ground crew was the cutouts.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Well, yeah, because
vacuum cleaner.
He didn't have to You didn't. Well, someone ran the Zamboni.
Zamboni, yeah. Suck up the water.
Well, Rick, put it this way. Sometime back then at the Vet, Tom and I both worked there. You know, sometimes you'd have to, in the middle of the day, you'd have to go get someone from the ground crew to do something, set up the field. The question was whether they were watching F Troop or McHale's Navy.
Or Hogan's Heroes.
Or Hogan's Heroes, right. One of those three. All right, you're two for two. I'm going to catch a little heat from the ground crew on that one. All right, number three. Three pitchers have thrown a no-hitter and a home run in the same game. Okay, three pitchers have thrown a no-hitter but only one home run in the same game. Which one is not one of these pitchers? Jim Lomborg, Wes Farrell, Jim Tobin, Earl Wilson.
Lomborg.
Lomborg is correct. See, I knew this.
Tobin hit three home runs in one game.
Is that right?
Yeah. Tobin. He hit three home runs in one game.
I know Earl. He was a good hitter, man.
Yeah.
Powerful man.
All right, you're three for three. Number four, three pitchers have slugged two home runs on same day as throwing a complete game shutout. Not a no-hitter, but three pitchers have slugged two home runs on the same day as throwing a complete game shutout. Which one is not one of these pitchers? Sonny Siebert, Milt Pappas, Pedro Ramos, Jack Billingsley.
What was the last one? Not Jack Billingham.
What did I say, Billingsley? I combined Billingham. I knew. See, I always mess up one thing.
He always says he messes up the quiz every time. I was
trying to, yes. trick me.
You got that one right. You got that one right. All right, you're four for four. This is a no-brainer. How old were you when you made your debut for the Philadelphia Phillies? Do I even have to give the?
We already answered.
Number 18. 18 years old. 5 for 5. Number six. Who did you issue a walk? And you answer this one on June 23rd, 1971, to spoil the perfect game.
Davey Concepcion,
you're on a roll. We answer this one. How many home runs did you have in your major league career?
15.
See, all you have to do, this is the last one. On June 30th, 1976, you were perfect against the Orioles until this player singled to start the sixth, which ended up being the only hit allowed in the game. Who was that player?
Probably Bumbry.
Now I'll give you the.
Go ahead.
I'll give you the multiple choice. Bobby Gritch, Lee May, Brooks Robinson, Paul Blair.
Paul Blair.
Eight for eight. He joins two or three people to go, right?
Who else? Ruben Amaro, I think, went 8 for 8.
But we're talking to a guy who had a no-hitter and two home runs in a game. Of course he's going to go 8 for 8, right? He doesn't do mediocrity.
We had Larry Boa on. Of course, we've both known Bo for a long time, and you played with him, and he'll be catching your first ball today.
That's what I heard.
You still keep in touch with Larry, Rick?
No.
Oh, you don't?
I haven't seen or talked to Larry in a long time. He's my age, too. I think I'm just a couple months older than him. Yeah. He's born the same year.
Yeah.
45. And I'm considering telling Larry to maybe wear a mask up there tonight. I might be bouncing one. And don't tell him where the ball's going to go. I haven't thrown a pitch, a ball in 15 years since I was coaching. Pitching coach in Lancaster.
Okay. Yeah, with Von Hayes, right?
Yes, and also with before that was Tommy Herr.
Oh, sure.
We won our first pennant in 2006 there.
Yeah. The Barnstormers.
Right.
How about it?
Love Lancaster.
And Tommy's from that area, right?
Yeah, he lives there. Yeah, he's from there, right.
Awesome. Well, you're going to do great on the field, Rick. Just, ice up a little bit maybe or warm up beforehand.
I think I'll ice afterwards.
Afterwards.
Right. Don't get distracted by the Fanatic.
No. The Fanatic will be good to you today. It was really great having you here, Rick.
Nice being here.
Yeah, really appreciate you joining the podcast. This was a thrill for us.
This was fun. Thank you.
Well, enjoy the day today. It's your day. So.
Oh, I will. And, all right. I'm very proud and privileged to be here.
Great.
Thanks again, Rick. We really appreciate it. Backstage with the Golden
Blade. It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.